Hey everybody, Matt Michaels here on the DeFalco Files with the owner and creator of FSW, the future stars of wrestling here in Las Vegas, Mr. Joe DeFalco. And Joe, we are heading into the 15th anniversary show this Sunday, the 23rd at the Silverton Casino. Doors at 4 o'clock, is that correct?
No, well, yeah. Technically, doors are at 4, but we do have a meet and greet for people who purchase meet and greet tickets. That'll start at 3:30.
There we go. And, you know, the tickets are, you know, going fairly well from what I've seen. There's a lot of you can't walk through the Silverton without seeing the footage playing, which is a nice little thing that I think I don't remember seeing before. I think that this has now been a little longer with the promotion.
Is it inside?
Yeah, it's inside. So when you're walking by, like the when they're giving out the freebies,
yeah,
have the screens behind there. And
finally,
stuff.
Yeah, I remember going last time, and I'm like, "What the fuck, man!" Like, the marquee looks great, but fantastic, yeah. And it's like, well, why can't they play it inside? And you know, now that you tell me, you know, there we go.
Yeah, which is great because that's a bunch of extra eyes. And one of the best things about the video is that it is an eye catcher because all of a sudden you're walking and out of the corner of your eye, you see this like someone getting smashed through something. And then you got like Bateman with this ridiculous look. You're just like, what is that? Oh, so it's such a catchy video. It's great that it's inside as well.
You know, hey, hopefully by the 15th show, they'll actually really try to promote us.
Yeah. Well, by the 25th anniversary.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here we are. It's the lead-in week. And I'm sure anyone who follows you on social media is aware of or curious of some of the things that have been going on, because there have been some I'd say some obvious and some cryptic messages. So how has the week been going? As we've talked a little bit already, I know it's interesting.
Well, I decided that I was going to add even more work for myself by bringing back the Hall of Fame ceremony. So now that is Saturday. We got Gabe Sapolsky doing the seminar Saturday afternoon. So all over the place.
Right.
So literally, I woke up today at like 6 a.m. and I was tossing and turning, couldn't go back to bed, went downstairs. I ended up finally falling back asleep a little bit watching, you know, Fox 5 news that I watch every single day for 18 hours, it seems like. And it was like, oh, shit, I forgot to order the Hall of Fame plaques. So I'm like, oh, shit, it's fucking, I got to do that by 9 o'clock. That was in my mind at 6 a.m. So I go look for the emails from the past, because 2019 was the last time we did it.
Right.
And, of course, I finally find one from 2017. So I call up. Turns out in 2020, they sold the place and it's under new ownership. But they ended up having something from 2018. So I don't have to worry about sending a logo and all the other stuff. And it's like, right. Thankfully, they'll have it ready by Friday afternoon. It's like, okay. Then I'm going to order the sandwiches and I have to do that. And it's like, so I went to Bonds and I went to Smith's and trying to figure out the type of sandwiches and what's going to be enough. And then Kenny King, like, hey, you know, can you make sure you reserve a table for me? I got my father flying in, my cousins flying in, my family, my girl. I'm like, dude, how many fucking tables you need, Kenny? Like, how much food do I got to order? Like, what the fuck? Like, which so is great because, you know,
Kenny is turning this into a family barbecue more so.
Yeah. It's like, what the fuck? And it's like, oh, by the way, by Monday, we find out Brittany Brooks, she can't go. And we're running the scenarios in my head. And it's like, well, what if she wins? And I think we talked about that last week, that if she wins, she may have to give up the title anyway. So it's like, right. You know what? We got to figure out what we're going to do. And, you know, I hit up Zamaya. I still don't know what we're going to do. It is now Thursday. But Gypsy Mac will be there because she's going to be in the Battle Royal. Zamaya, she's coming down. I just got Jada Stone, who just worked TNA. Yeah. So I'm pretty sure Jada Stone's definitely going to be involved.
Yeah. That's a great opponent for Rochelle too.
So honestly, I am looking at doing another Fatal 4-Way one pin wins. And
so you could have a very convoluted storyline going where the championship just kind of keeps getting messed around with because of all these random four ways and the wrong person getting pinned. And
well, you know, the tag team match, which is the best version of it, is the elimination style.
Right.
So we're good with that. And then we have, you know, the women's. So, you know, I try not to do more than one four-way in a match. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But, you know, it is what it is. So, I don't know if we announced it last week, but we got Bay versus Hammerstone, the two great – many people, you know, if you exclude Cross, those are two of the three greatest champions in FSW history, Bay and Hammerstone, going at it. And then, you know, they wrestled twice at Against All Odds, and they've probably been in the ring with each other a ton of times, but both guys are at their peak right now. So, you know, that's going to be interesting enough.
And you need to capitalize now that TNA's popularity from NXT's rub this past Tuesday. I mean, you got two TNA stars on your show,
man. Stars. We got the stars.
So,
you know, and, you know. So we got a lot of stuff planned. The Battle Royal, you know, it's been expanded to 25 people.
Nice.
You know, Sin Bodhi threw his hat in the ring. He's going to be in town. So, you know, he was looking for a match. And again, just shows you how loaded everything is that Sin Bodhi's going to be in the Battle Royal. And it's our Nick Bockwinkel Memorial Battle Royal. Nick was the first inductee into the Hall of Fame, you know, Vegas legend, you know, one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. So, you know, we're excited about that. But it's like, yeah, as I joke, it's like the week leading into, it's like, man, the things that we announced the House of Glory show for August 17th, and we're, you know, in the process of, hey, we announced Amazing Red, Santana is going to be there, as well as Bay and Limelight and Kenny King. So we're working on that. I just solidified a deal for another Versus show in October. That right now we're looking at October 26th. And I'll give it away on the podcast. It's with CZW. So they're going to be coming out west.
Nice.
Exactly. And that's the idea. It's like, unfortunately, we need companies that are comparable or have a bigger following elsewhere, and they want to come to Vegas, and they're smart because they know it's hard. You know, OVW canceled the Dollar Loan Center. I looked the other day, like, hey, what's going on? It's 4 or 5 weeks away. And then it's like, canceled. Well, you can't not promote anything. Like,
right.
You want to talk about no promotion. Nope. Only if you go to the, you know, AXS site and typed in OVW. It's like, these guys are really doing a show? Like, I can't believe it. Like, they haven't even talked to us, and Sin's friends with Al Snow.
Right.
And D'Lo about, you know, the ring, you know, or we're not handing it to you, you know? And it's like, what's going on? And not a peep. And now we know why.
Yeah.
Because they ended up supposedly booking this tour, and they were going to do something in Phoenix the day before, 2 days earlier. And it was like, No idea. And it's like, you know, we're trying to get things out there. Right. You know, you can't be a regional company and say, hey, we're going to run this 3,000. We're going to set it up for 3,000 seats when AEW only set it up for 1,500.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I get it. You got a money guy. That's awesome. But I didn't think money. I thought money guys were money guys because they made money in things that they did. I didn't think they wanted to just hand money over and just like flush it down the toilet.
Well, and it's very interesting too, because you're talking Dollar Loan Center. So you're talking a bigger, you know, a bigger booking venue. It doesn't add up, because absolutely right. There was no promotion at all. So even if it was quote unquote on the books, they were moving forward as if it wasn't on the books.
Well, that's like us going to say, hey, everybody come see FSW. We're going to be running Madison Square Garden next week. Right. What? Like, great idea. It was like, we had that opportunity to go to the Showboat where GCW is king. And the only way we were going to do it is if we were partnering with GCW. And then we would have to, like, at that time, it was like, hey, the idea was maybe we did Cardona versus Cross, because right. Cross had been released from WWE at that point. And it's like, you know, we got to have marquee matchups, because as good as our guys are, they're not known
right.
in New Jersey. You know, we're not GCW, and we don't claim to be. It's like, you know, that's the biggest misconception in wrestling with these companies, delusion.
Right.
We know what our value is, and our value is in Vegas. Despite wanting to be valuable elsewhere, we're trying to get the word out, but when you don't run those places, it's impossible to do. You know, GCW is the only company who can really come out here and command doing a show that's going to get 700, 800, 1,000 people. So right. of course we partner up with them. And even when we do our show after our show, we pack the place, but it's 250 to 300 people. Now, maybe we can get more if we promoted it. You know, there were times, you know, GCW, that's what I want to do. I want to do a big show with them when they're in LA the day before and they're not doing Vegas at all.
Right.
Now there's a good chance to get that 700, 800 people, and more eyes are on us as we do FSW versus the world, brother. It's coming.
You know, speaking of the world, that includes a certain promotion in Houston that I know you've, you know, had some interactions with in the past, and knowing Booker a little bit, is that a possibility of talking to him?
Well, it's always a possibility. You know, we have talked in a few occasions, and then, you know, the faction and them go down there, and Braxton hit me up. He's like, oh, yeah, Book's looking to do something with us in WrestleMania. Well, I'll be honest. I sent a couple messages. I haven't heard back. It's like, hey, bro, you know, you don't really need to go through Braxton. You know me. We've discussed things. We've done business together. Hey, we can love to do something together, you know. And, you know, hey, he's a busy guy. So hopefully, you know, he'll get back to me before April of next year.
I just love that Braxton's his agent now.
Hey.
See how he makes things work? Braxton, see? You always underestimated him, man.
Nope. I knew exactly who he was.
Oh, man. You know, when you... You think about now looking at a rundown order for this show, especially with kind of still piecing together what you're going to do with the women's match. Obviously, the Battle Royal is going to kick off the show. And
the Pain Train, Dave Mazzani. I was going to make it a secret, but it's like, why? Dave's the one who sells the tickets.
Ooh, really?
Dave Mazzani.
Wow, man.
I think he was down at the school at 9 a.m. today trying to get the work in. You know, wow. We know he's got the cardio. He's a fireman.
Yeah. Yeah, we're getting some Ketchikan wrestling action in, man.
He was trying to get his sister to come down from Seattle to make a family reunion in the Battle Royal.
Yeah, that would, oh man, it'd be fun to see Gina. She's always a treat to watch too. It's great that Dave's working back in for a little action.
He trained. I saw him about a week and a half ago. He came in also to I guess to test the waters to see if he still felt he could go. So obviously, you know, he got things cleared and he hit me up last week. And it was like, well, we better get a flyer for you because I see him trying to push those tickets.
Yeah.
And we know that, you know, Dave's always been strong. You know, he comes from that MMA world because he knows that's how they got paid.
Yep.
It's like, you know, if you were in a band, if you can get people to come to your show, you're going to get a percentage of the door. Right. And we kind of worked that for some of the guys if they're able to push some tickets, you know. You know who your friends are because we give them two ticket offers. One is including them getting their bonus, and one is like the family rate where you're basically giving them the lowest rate and you're not worrying about the kickback.
Right.
Dave sells, I don't care who it is, Dave is selling full price. he's taking his kickback. I remember one show, him and Gina came in and they gave me this big envelope, and it was like at the end of the day, with their cut, they made more money than the main event guy.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, that's the whole thing. It's when you're used to it, like you said, the MMA guys are very versed in how to do that. Plus, you know, Dave's had his they had the gym, you know, he's had his experiences with businesses, and he just knows that. He's a smart man. And of course, guy uses the Iron Claw. Well, the Iron Claw is a hot product right now, right?
Right now, yes. You know, the only problem is, you know, the Battle Royal, there ain't very many pins. So,
oh, man.
It'd be interesting to see if Brett the Threat goes after Mizani.
You know, with Brett's maturity as a wrestler these past few years, that actually is a very, very intriguing matchup. And boy, talk about learning stuff. If you could get Dave and Brett into a small little program to get Brett some work with Dave.
Whew. Hey, who knows? Maybe they can get on the same page and I can, you know, I always said that I have in the back pocket, you know, the factions and the Fight Club still hasn't really taken off. And having Mizani and Brett the Threat leading the Fight Club. Sugar Brown's back. You got the boxer. So,
yeah, actually, that's an intriguing team right there. Mizani and Brett the Threat. Plus, we haven't seen Brett do a lot of tag action. So, you know, again, talk about learning and you know, honing the skill a little bit. That's the perfect type of, Man, some good ideas coming out of the morning session here. So when you look at it now, you got the Battle Royal, and then how do you fill the card together? Because you have, like you said, you got the tag match, you know, which is going to be multi. Most likely the women's match probably going to be multi. You have your one-on-one with Damian and Bodie. You have the 3-on-3. I mean, you have quite a stack of
actually it's 4-on-4.
4-on-4, yeah. So it's quite a lot
of fours. A lot of fours.
Yeah. For the 15.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously time is important. So the best way to do the Battle Royal is do it first. And you introduce, and again, it's individual entrances per se, but it's every 5 seconds. Brett the Threat, Dave Mizani, Jeff, we excellent, whoever it is. But it's going one by one, 5 seconds. But again, 25 names, if you do it in 10 seconds, that's 5 minutes basically.
Right.
So the idea is at 4:55, we start the announcement. That way it hits 5 o'clock. They're all in the ring. Play your, you know, the minute opener, whatever it is, boom, right into the match. That way we're saving 5 to 7 minutes, which is extremely important when it comes to timing. You know, we don't have to worry about building the steel cage this show. So we're okay right in that, you know. And again, as they say, card subject to change. Well, card order is subject to change, you know, because initially it was like, okay, the Battle Royal was probably going to go with the No Limits title match second. That was the plan. Okay. We knew Shogun and Limelight was going to be number 8.
Right.
There was a good chance the women's match was going to be number 7. And then it was like piecing things together. Where do you want the cash in the case? You know right. what I mean? It's like, okay, you got the multi-man tag title match. You got the snuff versus the originals. But you don't want to do 4 multi-matches, 4 singles matches, and then all of a sudden match 5, 6, 7, and 8 are all singles matches. You know what I mean? You're trying to break up what's going on. You could throw the women's match in between. You can throw the tag match in between something else. And
is like Bay Hammerstone, is that considered also a co-main event?
Yeah, but you don't want to have like those 2 championships back to back.
Right.
I really don't. You know what I mean? You don't want either one to overshadow the other.
Right.
And, you know, to me, the main event is the FSW Heavyweight Championship.
Of course. Right.
You know, the Mecca is a belt that doesn't get defended as often, but it is a marquee match, you know? So that's probably going to be in that 5 range if we're doing 8 matches. The women's match is definitely probably going to be a 6 or a 7. You know, there's a good chance the tag title match might be, say, match 6. So that pushes the cash in the case to maybe match 4. So maybe we're going Battle Royal, No Limits, Snuff versus Originals 3, cash in the case. Because, again, you don't want anything. You're trying to not to overshadow things. So in the case of Snuff and the Originals, no titles are on the line, but it's been extremely violent from day one. Well, if it's violent, there may be weapons. Who knows what's going on with those guys?
Right. Well,
you don't want to follow it up with just a regular singles match to where all of a sudden you lose the momentum of the show, because that was kind of a peak, but you can't put that match later. So now maybe you follow that up. Oh, shit, you got a real crash and burn match is the ladder match. And right. now you got a cash in the case ladder match. Oh, shit, okay. Now it's like, well, what do you follow that up with? Oh, shit, if we follow it up with Bay Hammerstone, fuck. Oh, shit, I'm there for that one.
Right.
Then all of a sudden, now you're into match 1, 2, 3, 4. That's 5. Now you got, okay, Bay and Hammerstone. Well, now you can 4-way elimination match. That's 6. Where's that 7? Then you got the women's match, which is also, at this point, looking to be a 4-way match.
Right.
So maybe you follow up Bay with Hammerstone with the women.
Right.
Into a tag, into a main event.
Right.
So, you know, that's what I'm looking at in my head. You know, Limelight thinks he's a funny motherfucker. So he calls me. Hey, bro. What's up? I'm not going to be able to make it Sunday. They changed the schedule of my movie. I'm like, I know you better be fucking kidding me. It ain't like, yeah, I'm kidding. It's like, I got enough shit to deal with because he started filming a movie in Rhode Island.
Right.
And he called last week to let me know, hey, the director's a wrestling fan. They're cool with it. You know, they're letting me take Sunday off. You know, so he's got to fly from Rhode Island to Vegas.
Vegas.
To basically wake up to fly right back to Rhode Island.
Yeah.
And, you know, that just shows the eagerness of Danny Limelight. You know, it's like he's really trying to make the rounds in all the in every circle he's in. And obviously, yeah. You know, being on a movie set for a week probably pays way better than I'm paying him for one wrestling match, you know.
It is a Lifetime movie, so.
Oh, is it? I don't know. I guess you posted what it was about.
Yeah, I think it was a Lifetime movie, which, hey, man, you know, the coolest thing that you said there, and I think that this is, again, one of the things that shows the acceptance, is the director's a wrestling fan. A lot of times, you know, those guys don't do that shit. We don't fuck with our schedule. You're working for us. So that also says a lot about how likable Danny is as a person. Because...
Oh, I hear otherwise. I hear a lot of people hate that. That's what I'm just saying. You know. I know Chris Bay likes him for whatever reason.
But, you know, the truth of the matter is that's not an easy thing, you know, to get someone to sign off on that when you're dealing with the production. So that's pretty remarkable that they could change around the schedule a little bit to shoot other things and still get things done and allow them the opportunity. And hopefully, you know, when he comes back to Rhode Island, he has a belt that he can take pictures on set with. And get some exposure for the championship. So sneak it into the movie set. You know?
Something. Like leave it on a counter.
Yeah. Just, you know, on the like on a mantle in the guy's house or something, right? You know, when you think about the potential of violence, you were talking about it. What are you expecting? You know, I'm sure the guys really haven't told you much. Are you expecting to be walking around Silverton trying to put out fires and then turn your head and see that so-and-so is bleeding like a pig and so-and-so is chained to something? And
oh, if they're bleeding, I don't care. You know, I'm not worried about that. You know,
I got a feeling that's going to be a fucking crazy ad. I mean, the sanity in that ring is probably Jake. That's probably about it. Yeah.
Believe me, Remy's crazier than you can imagine.
Hey, man.
You know.
He likes to pull off old man, you know, I've been through all the shit, you know. And then the next thing you turn, he's getting a fork stuck in his head or something. So
Yeah. Getting thrown out of Sam's Town for a fork fight.
Right. you know, speaking of, you know, that being the kind of the legacy and everything, when you think of what's going on at the Hall of Fame, did you ever envision when you started that this would become a thing? Because I don't think we ever talked about that really, you know, the idea of just kind of recognizing and what it actually, like you said, I don't think you even realized how much it means to the guys where you got a guy like Kenny who's really just super appreciative for being recognized. And, you know, I think everyone really is who is a part of it. And, you know, is this something that you saw when you thought about it as being something that would be kind of, I guess, grow into something that is respected by the guys? And I think guys actually are, you know, looking at it as it would be nice. You know, it's one thing to be on the wall. You've made it you know, in one of the big companies. But at the same time, being a Hall of Famer here means that you've been an integral part of the life and the story of the company.
Yeah, you know, it's weird because when in 2009, the legacy of Vegas wrestling was non-existent, to be honest with you. You know, the claim to fame was, you know, the fact that the AWA filmed at the Showboat. That was the legacy, which really wasn't much of a legacy, you know, but you knew Nick Bockwinkel came from here. And then so many years passed, and then, you know, T.C. Martin did the shows at the Silver Nugget. That drew well, did very, very well, you know, and they would get those guys fresh off TV. But it really, really had a short little run, you know, and it was a couple years, had the Warrior, and then he skated town and took the money and ran. You know, somehow he's on the radio still here in Vegas, and none of the Samoans have found him, I guess. He must have paid them. He must have paid them back, because I can't believe they would have allowed him to exist.
Yeah.
taking the money and run. You know what I mean? So after him, then you had Buffalo, and he ran not even a half a dozen shows, to be honest with you. You know, he filmed in his little fucking building next to Crazy Horse too. So he had the first big show at the Orleans, the second mediocre show at the Orleans, and then he did a couple at the Silver Nugget, and that was it.
Yeah.
Fast forward, that was 1999-2000, because I was doing the radio show. Right. Now, from 2000 to 2009, there's absolutely nothing. And it was like, oh, they deregulated wrestling. So Joe said, hey, I want to run a show. Ran it a fucking swap meet. You know what I mean? Like, who's going to think that this is going to take off to anything? And it was like I said, I always felt I had a good knack for talent and, you know, brought in the Young Bucks. Who are these guys, you know? And you fast forward. But it took a few years because, you know, even then, we brought in Brian Cage immediately. We brought in Sean Ricker immediately. The Reno Scum, the Commandos. You know, a lot of our talent was based outside of Vegas because Rush's school never produced shows because they had the athletic commission. And obviously, I would say Rush was never confident enough to spend all that money that was necessary, ambulance on duty and the paramedics and a venue, because he was using the younger guys. And I came up with the idea of running weekly shows out of the school, but they were free. So, and that was when I got involved with Rush. And then, you know, different ideas, different people. It was like, yeah, you know, it just became not really worth it for me. And then took the hiatus, didn't do nothing. And then it was like, oh, shit, they deregulated wrestling. I want to run, at least run a show. So we ran the show. And, hey, Disco lived in town. So I remember driving to Sapphire's, and he was working the door and introducing myself. And we had him booked for the second show at the swap meet. But we got shut down because you weren't allowed to run events or whatever. Now we were stuck again. And then we came back at the Silver Nugget. And I think the best thing that happened was we got shut down at the swap meet, because I think it would have been difficult to keep running. You know, we met people at the Silver Nugget, let them know what we were going to do. Ended up doing really well because we got Jimmy Superfly Snuka there, because we knew Snuka Jr., who had trained with Rush. And right. Superfly lived in Vegas at the time to see his son. And that's how that happened. And then The Godfather. And, you know, we started building a brand out of the thing. And now all of a sudden, 4 or 5 years later, we started 2009. I think the first Hall of Fame was in 2017. So that would mean if we did it for the anniversary of 2017, I probably didn't come up with the idea until the end of 2016. So it was 7+ years of seeing what we were doing and growing and you know, as good as we were doing, we still weren't future stars of wrestling. We still hadn't gotten you know, those name guys sign the big that to the big companies yet. But now all of a sudden we're producing a lot of local talent, and the anniversary shows mean something. And it's like, hey, we got Nick Bockwinkel. Rush was instrumental because he got me involved. And Alcatraz, who was a SoCal legend, and him and Tyshawn had, you know, put us on the map with that first steel cage match. It's Samstown. Now all of a sudden you produced talent that people would care about having a Hall of Fame for. And right. Then all of a sudden it was like, hey, we're going to do this. And they had the Hater Nation, and we did the thing at the Esports Place, which was fucking fantastic. And then the next year, you know, we had Disco in, and we had the super fan, Eileen Bruno, who passed away from cancer. But basically on her deathbed, she would try to come to an FSW show, you know. And the bonds that were formed, and you saw the friendships that were formed. And from the kids class, the people that became friends, and it really became this family of people coming together that hadn't known each other for one common love of wrestling.
Right.
You know, as I said, I never did it for the money, because I never became rich doing this. And same with Rocky, and same with the wrestlers, and same with the fans, and the same with, you know, people wanting to help out, and who's going to be, you know, a ring announcer. It isn't because they're getting paid this big dollars to do it. People are doing stuff because they have a passion for it. And now you have all these people, a common passion, and it's exciting to do. And then, you know, at the 15th year, there's now so many aggravating, annoying things. And running the school and the day to day. And it's funny because as much as you love the show, you dread the show, because it's like now, oh shit, show's in 2 or 3 days. What the fuck?
Right.
But when it's said and done, you're glad you did it. The show's over. Am I doing commentary? In most cases, yeah. In some cases, no. But you got these fans. Oh, best show ever, Joe. And I always laugh because, you know, a lot of people, hey, best show ever. But you know what? People love coming out to the FSW show. They see these new talents. We got the new talents coming in now that are, you know, the AJs and the Foxes. They're killing it and shit. We got a lot of young guys. And it's like, that's what keeps you going. That there's another person walking through the door that you look at. And it's like, you think fast forward 9 months or a year, and like, holy shit. Like, I remember this motherfucker couldn't, like, fucking do a back bump, couldn't do a roll, you know? So you grow bonds. Even to the people that you have issues with, you know, there's always something there. You know, I always joke about the Suavecitos and whatever. Yeah, and we butted heads a lot, but I never disliked them.
Right.
You know what I mean? You know, I felt they were better, not in terms of their wrestling skills, that they were better than the way they're acting. Like, you know, and again, it's the growing up process and you know, understanding things, because, you know, nobody there has been in my shoes. You know, I produced something for you to be able to do. It wasn't for me to be able to do. I'm giving an option to wrestle, not because I wanted to wrestle. It was because I loved wrestling. And then it progressed into this, you know, much bigger thing. And it all culminates with the anniversary show.
Right.
So, you know, yeah, I talk about, man, how much fucking work it is. But deep down, I guess, you know, there are many times I could have walked away that I don't. So obviously the fire's there, the spark's there, whatever it is. There's always something to spark your interest to do something. And it's like, oh, shit, these versus shows with House of Glory and CZW. And, hey, getting calls from WWE. Hey, we need guys. Hey, getting calls from TNA. Hey, we need guys. Hey, getting calls from AEW. Hey, we need guys. You know, right. And regardless of everything in this town, they're coming to FSW for things that they need.
Right.
Is it a ring? Is it a person? Is it a group? You know, is it extra hands? Is it other companies looking for talent? They're coming to us.
Right.
Go look at every other show sprinkled in. They're FSW people.
Yeah.
You know, you don't come to FSW and see all of these other companies' people. You see FSW people here, there, everywhere. Right. And it even goes to Arizona. Go look at Dom. Anybody they use outside of their company is basically FSW people.
Right.
So, you know, I see some of my guys, mariachis. They're going to Santino Brothers in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Eli Everfly's buddy, RJ, who does some shows, is booking some of those guys because he likes the FSW guys. It's the same with us when we're booking a Santino guy. Because we respect everything they do. And generally, when one of them come over, we know what we're going to get. Same thing with Dom's guys.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's the cycle from the Hammerstone to the Graves to the Class to now the Devin Renos to the Koas, you know, to Zamaya. And it's like all of a sudden, there's Jaden Monroe now, who is one of their newer proteges. Young kid, looks really good. Yeah. And, you know, they're just cycled in.
Yeah.
And you go to what you feel most secure with. So, you know, I know Dom's guys. Now I knew EJ from before. Hey, Jacob Austin Young puts over Thugnificent. Hey, they're a tag team. Guess what? Now they're a top tag team in FSW. And it took a while for EJ to get on there. And it wasn't because any dislike or it's positioning. It's right place, right time. Look at Wise Guy. Guy I've liked for 10 years. And now he's finally, you know, being in the tag with Dutra is basically put them in a spot to where now it isn't hoping I could find the spot for him. It's like, hey, who am I going to have them work at this show?
Right.
Because the best match at the last show, in my opinion, was Makeshift Chemistry, which was two young guys, Fox and AJ, against Dutra and Wise Guy.
Which, you know, that's a great point, too. And that is, again, the mixture of two veteran guys like that working with two young guys. You go some places, those veteran guys are just not giving anything to the kids.
No, and that's what we think I think me personally, I've always been one to explain stuff, like to Wise Guy, like, hey, bro, you know, I like you a lot, but, you know, affordability, I kind of feel bad because what I can pay you, you're driving from, you know, Central California. You're not driving from L.A., which is still not a great payday to do it. And right. He has some people, and some of those guys just aren't better than me having to leave off one of my guys for, you know, it's a younger guy. Well, I don't really have a spot for that younger guy. That's your buddy but I understand why, because you're trying to save money on gas. Well, you know, whatever you're looking to do, you know, I'll give him an opportunity, but if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. So now you're forced to drive by yourself in a 5-6 hour drive. You know what I mean? And it's like, okay, you know, but those guys do well outside of FSW. They want to be a part of FSW. Those guys will take the hit and fly themselves in just because they can get a decent flight.
Yeah.
And they're not doing it because they weren't making much money to begin with. So it's nickels and dimes.
Right.
Where do I want to be? And on the West Coast, we've built up a reputation enough for people to be like, hey, I'm not worried about what the payday is. What you can do is cool. And then you got guys that what I can do isn't cool enough. And again, it's no harm, no foul. There's guys that you've seen that we've given opportunities to, and they just felt it wasn't cost effective for them. It's not a personal thing.
Right.
I'm not going to pay somebody more just because that's what they want. And they understand that, but it's also this is what people are working for. This is what we can afford in the budget. If you can't afford to do it, that's cool. Now, obviously, if I think you're so talented, like, say, a Hammerstone, not that he ever did, because he never did. But if he said, hey, Joe, I need $20 more. Hey, Joe, I need $40 more. If he said, hey, Joe, I need $100 more to drive from Phoenix, I don't know where Hammerstone would have been in the pecking order of the greatest champion in FSW.
Sure.
Because I wouldn't have been able to afford to pay him that, because there were guys at the time that had been higher on the food chain than him, that if I paid him that, just like I do now, when I brought in people that I really wanted to use and they needed a little bit more money, that's how Hammerstone got the bump, because he was the guy that I looked at like, hey, he did it for this. If I got to pay this guy more money than him, well, then I got to pay him more money.
Right. Right.
You know, and I always try to be fair, and I always try to tell people up front, this is how it is. Now, is there room for negotiation? Sure. Always. Hey, maybe I can get your room. Hey, maybe I can do this for you. I don't know. How right. can we make it work? And if we can, great. And if we can't, okay. Again, no harm, no foul. You know, there's a guy that I used. I liked a lot, put him in good positions, decided he wanted to double his rate. Sorry, can't do it, bro. Okay. You know, a year later, hey, if you got any spots, but it's like, not really. You know, you had your spot. I gave you a good spot, and that wasn't good enough for you. You know, you're saying if I got anything, but now if I say I do, are you still going for that higher rate that you came at me with? And again, I ain't saying came at me with as if it was, you know, anger issues or anything. But that was what he wanted or he needed to drive to Vegas to come work the show.
Sure.
So it's like, sorry, bro, but other people have taken that opportunity and now your spot is no longer there.
Right.
You know, it's no different than people in FSW who that have been with me from day one, that they decided they were taking time off. Not just for me, just taking time off. You know, you disappear. You know, we have guys, they disappear. Well, unless you walk into a situation, you kind of got to go where I need you to go. And yeah. we've had people like that. Hey, you know. I got a spot for you. You want to come back for the anniversary show? I put you in the battle royal. Hey, you know, I prefer. Well, what you prefer in my company doesn't mean fucking dick to me. You're the one who chose to leave. Now you want to come back. This is what I got for you. I gotta know that you're gonna be there when I need you. So you only want to come back to a certain storyline or be involved in a higher. There's guys who put in that time and effort. Again, it's disrespectful to them who've put in the work for you to leave. And then a year and a half later, you want to come back and get given right. something.
Right.
It's got to be. Everything is earned. Like they say, like I say about the titles, the championships. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, and I used to have that same philosophy. Well, you didn't really win the title. You were given the title. But you were given the title because you worked so hard that you were the guy deserving of it, which made you the best.
Yeah.
And it isn't because you were the best wrestler. It was because you were the best, whether it was your promo ability, whether it was your work, whether it was your attitude. You're taking 8 different things and putting that best, the best person involved. You may not be the best promo, but you may be the best worker. You might be the best worker, but you may not be the best promo.
Yeah.
You know, it's a grading system. You know, it's like if you can have 4 out of the 5 attributes and one of them is kind of weaker, well, you don't really make that guy talk as much.
Right.
You know, there's different guys. Chris Bay was not a talker in the beginning. Hammerstone was never a talker.
Right.
But he became fantastic.
Yep.
Because now you feel you're confident enough. And that's all it is in wrestling. It's the confidence level.
Sure.
You know, of being able to go out there and look people in the eye in the audience and feel comfortable with everything you're saying. you know, that's what made Cross high on everybody's radar immediately. It wasn't because, oh man, what a drop toe hold. Oh, I can't believe a guy like Kevin Cross did a 630. No, he wasn't Sean O'Hare.
Right.
But, you know, he talked, you know, Tyshawn Prince, you know, he gave you that look. You're like, oh shit, that motherfucker's going to beat my ass.
Yeah.
The believability. So you have to believe it before anybody else is going to believe it.
No, that's the biggest key. That's, you know, I don't care if you are the best fundamental wrestler in the world.
That was what Brad Armstrong was, and that guy almost never won a match. He was put in there because they wanted the shitty wrestler to have a good match because they could with Brad Armstrong.
Yep.
But if Brad Armstrong had the charisma of Kurt Hennig, Mr. Perfect,
if he had the
charisma, he would have been a world champion, Brad Armstrong.
If he would have had the charisma of his brother.
Right.
You know, If you would have taken his skill Botox charisma,
Road Dog was never considered an upper echelon worker, but he did so much more in the business
so much
than his brother and his and his referee brother.
Right.
And his other brother and his other brother.
And it's
like, you know, and that's what's trying to get into the younger kids. It's like, a lot of you guys can all do the same moves, okay? Yep. You have to set yourself apart in how you do it. It's like, I don't know what it is. I watch Fox and AJ against Makeshift Chemistry. And it's just the speed at what they do things. They do things differently. It's like I watched Jacob Austin Young, and I'd like him better than a lot of people because his offense seemed different. And he utilized a lot of the Japanese style. So a lot of times guys are lumped into the same move set ideas of things that they're going to do. And then you'd watch Jacob Austin Young and be a little bit different. And it'd be like, oh, okay, that's cool. You know, it's different. Eli Everfly. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, he'll do some crazy ass shit. But I always joked he'd fucking tap out Hammerstone. Like, He has that ability. Yep. And in some cases, that ability is Kevin Cross's character and persona and his mic skills that catapulted him to the top. I was telling the story the other day, LA Knight, Sean Ricker, new kid, was looking to come in and, you know, saw who we trained and things like that. And now, you know, I always have to tell him, yeah, we didn't train Brian Cage and Sean Ricker. They came to us very early in their careers. And I, you know, talked about when LA Knight, Sean Ricker came in for a show and he got a microphone. And we all, I just remember in the back, I was looking like, holy shit, this motherfucker is going to make it. Like, we knew the very first show in 2009 that he came to our show. And it took a while, and he made it, and then he got sent back, and then he went to TNA, and he kind of made it. Still worked for us, then left for good. But it was like, you knew that, you know, he exuded confidence. He looked like $1 million, and he was fantastic on a microphone.
Yeah.
Now, he wrestled Roderick Strong, one of the best wrestlers around. They had a really good match. Are we going to say, oh, Roderick Strong made him have a good match? No, he's capable of having a good match. You know, certain things you see, you know, you read, always read the reports of the shows, and LA Knight early on, oh, you know, basic match, blah, 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 blah. And he wasn't over because of his wrestling skills. We know that.
Right.
Cross wasn't over because he was the best wrestler on the roster. He's not going to out-wrestle Brian Danielson. But everybody has to have a certain attribute. Brian Danielson was a guy who was, oh, this motherfucker's the worst. He can't talk. He's never going to make it as great as he is. And then all of a sudden, one day, yes. And then all of a sudden, he took off the following. They got behind him. And whether it's the confidence level or whatever. Look at CM Punk and Drew McIntyre. It's one of the best feuds going on, and they aren't doing nothing but mainly talking up until recently. Well, yeah, and he didn't do anything. He did the referee, which I knew it was. It's like, that's Punk from the back. But the way they did it with the camera, they were smart. Well and done.
And then you do the next night, Drew quits and just walks out. You got Hunter backstage, which you don't see. It's right storytelling.
Yeah, maybe The Rock shouldn't announce Drew McIntyre re-signed the 5-year deal. They, at least if they would have went with the deal that he still wasn't signed.
Right.
Now, because all the millions of people that post different things that they know everything about wrestling would have been, Drew didn't resign. See, he knew he was going to get booked over. And then you're going to have a million people agreeing on that Drew McIntyre is going to show up on AEW and he's going to lose a match to Collision to Jeff Jarrett.
So first we just learned that you easily could book AEW. That's par for the course of
and in 3 AEW. Months he'll be waiting for his next assignment.
No, it's interesting though. I think you made a good point with Danielson, and I think that Brian always had that reputation of being an incredible wrestler. There were occasions you saw his personality on the indies, but what really working with The Miz early on in WWE, I think helped kind of up him a little bit, but working with Kane and coming up with the Yes Thing and the Hug It Out. And,
so basically you're saying it was Scorpio Sky who made Bryan Danielson what he is today.
Yeah, of course.
After those sessions.
Hey man, if there's one person that's underutilized in this business right now, it's Scorpio, man. That guy has always had.
You can look at half the roster of AEW and say they're underutilized. Look at Santana. He's exploded again on the indie scene. And him, LAX was the hottest tag team in wrestling with Pentagon and Phoenix. In TNA, a company that never has the hottest anything. As good as they may be, because they didn't have the reach. And those guys thought they made the right decision going to AEW over WWE because they thought they would be lost in the shuffle. Yep. And they were immediately lost in the shuffle. Yeah, they were on TV every week, nodding their head to whatever Chris Jericho said.
Right.
And it was like, wow, that was such a great faction that it was like, wow, you underutilized Swagger. You underutilized LAX. And you could have made all of them main event players.
Yep.
And you didn't.
Yep. And let's face it too, Santana,
who you will see at House of Glory FSW on August 17th, finally got him in an FSW ring.
Yeah. And it's interesting because doing this TNA contract for him benefits him because he can do the indie shows and. Oh, yeah, it just happens to be the timing of, look, the door's open with TNA and NXT now.
Yeah, Joe Hendry got in. Kazarian, it was like, boy, they slid that under the radar.
Final four for Kazarian, too, because they trust him.
They didn't even announce him. It was like he was already in the ring. It was like.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden they say, when Hendry got thrown out by Kazarian, it's like, another TNA guy. And then they let him go to the final four because
you would have thought, hey, because Frankie was with WWE for a long time. So it wasn't like, man, they didn't even like, they just like past
Frankie,
that one.
Frankie was not with WWE for a long time.
He was a couple of years.
He was with them for a small cup of tea. No. Recently talked to him about this. He was only there for about a year or so.
I remember him on SmackDown.
No, he never made it to that level.
No, I'm telling you, Frankie Kazarian was on TV in WWE.
Well, he was on Heat. He was on the Saturday night show or in the
I could swear he was. I'm gonna have to look that up.
Yeah, but are you sure you're not thinking of Bobby Roode? Because those two guys.
Oh yeah, no. Frankie Kazarian was much earlier.
Yeah, no, it was somewhere around 2002, somewhere around there. Because he left UPW, did that, and then was gone fairly quickly just because they really didn't do anything with him. And then that's when he started doing, you know, when TNA started up and they got him and Chris.
He debuted in 2005 on Velocity, beating Nunzio, and remained undefeated through July and August. And this time he picked up victories against Scotty Too Hotty, Funaki, and Paul London. But I'm not seeing anything about SmackDown. But I remember a minute, so I don't know.
Well, it's, you know,
20 years ago.
Yeah, I hope he had a good run in your memory on the show.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, you know, but the thing is that Kaz is respected, like, you know, everyone knows him, you know. So
he's married to Tracy Brooks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wasn't she married to Bobby Roode?
I don't think so. I don't know. Him and Tracy have been together for over a decade. So
yeah, it says 2010.
Yeah.
I could have swore she was with who knows?
Maybe she was more married to Bobby Roode while Kaz was on SmackDown, and then when he got released from SmackDown, the alternate Joe universe.
It could be, man. I remember one time meeting superstar Billy Graham, and I swore when I was watching back in the day, we used to watch on WOR in New York, Channel 9. It was every Saturday night at midnight. Yep. And I swear Vince McMahon was the announcer. And they were talking about how Bruno Sammartino lost the title to superstar Billy Graham. It was either in Baltimore or Pittsburgh, like at a house show. And like, you know, 2 weeks later, you know, Bruno got it back. And I asked superstar Billy Graham about it. And he was like, no, that never happened. And I'm like, man, I swear that happened. And he's like, no, that didn't happen. So he was probably mistaken.
Yeah, of course. Of course. I mean, it took a lot of shots in the head. So I'm sure.
Well, Bobby Roode was Tracy Brooks. Tracy Brooks was the manager.
Manager, yeah.
Huh, that is weird.
But yeah, Tracy and Kaz have been, it's almost 15 years, and they got, I think it's two kids now. And it's really fun to see, you know, to see when these marriages go really well. And, thinking back when Kaz was a kid, and it's just like, holy mackerel, that guy has come so far. Probably one of the most respected in the business, but under the radar to a lot of fans. So it was nice to see him get a little shine. And it was interesting to see, you know, in an NXT ring, you had AEW, TNA, you know, everyone bitches about the, you had Lucha's, this Forbidden Door crap. And
well, I was going to say, yeah, in AEW, two guys that are assigned to the same company can't even wrestle on the same show. That is like the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my entire life. Like so Pentagon's not allowed in the building because somebody from CMLL is wrestling that night? Like, what the fuck? That is mind-boggling. Like, Pentagon should be the number one lucha, and CMLL, it's like those guys, most of them don't get pushed. Like, right. Pentagon and Phoenix were like our mainstays in AEW, and you're telling me they can't be on a show?
Yeah.
It's like, I have to come to an agreement?
Right. And that's the funny thing. But I mean, you've mentioned it before, you know, when you're dealing with outside promotions, you got two different guys from two different companies coming into your company, and you have to, you know, kind of, you know, play the peacemaker and try to figure out what happens in that scenario. But here's a guy who owns a major company, and he can't get his head out of his ass to say, well, no, you're working with us. We're doing what I say. I'm giving you this exposure.
Because it didn't happen before. So then obviously it was never put in the contract that says my guys can't wrestle. Like, all right, I get it. Phoenix and Pentagon can't beat your CMLL tag team because he's AAA. Okay, I get that. But Pentagon and Phoenix can't wrestle the Young Bucks on a show because Atlantis is on the show later?
Right.
Like, what does that have to do with anything?
Well,
like a WWE, you got AJ Styles going to Noah.
Yeah.
Nakamura wrestled somewhere.
Yeah.
Wrestled Muda, I think, in his last match.
Yeah.
Then there was at a different show.
Yeah. It's, you know, the one thing about Vince is he changed the idea that pro wrestling was a local market venture, right? He made it national. He made it global. He made it one company. He had challenges. He had other companies, you know, try to create the same thing. All that stuff. That's great. But the one thing Vince didn't do was ever evolve. And he was just about Vince. Now you see you have Hunter and Sean and these guys who get it because they've done it. You've also got guys like Nick Khan who are all about entertainment. That's it.
Well, you say that about Vince, but it's funny. When he had the opportunity and Ric Flair came over with the World Heavyweight Championship, he flaunted it everywhere. Well, maybe it would have meant more if people knew that there was another company. Like, to you, no other company existed. But the minute Ric Flair came in, he's the World Heavyweight Champion. Blah, 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 blah. And it was like, you don't even acknowledge. But if you look, like, they didn't even... Like, CM Punk talked about Ring of Honor, and he talked TNA, but they wouldn't say the words AEW.
Right.
Which is kind of funny.
Right. And that's still kind of in there. There's the
insight. It was all the name drops, and then it was like, oh, that other company.
Right.
New Japan this and that. And I remembered I was watching, I don't know how I caught it, but they were doing, like, the pre-show thing. And it was Big E or somebody was all like, oh, my God, he said New Japan? I think it was when CM Punk was talking. Yeah. And, like, Big E was just like, we allowed to say that now?
But, you know, and it goes to show, quite honestly, if the other guy wasn't such an idiot, you know what? Right now, they'd probably have a bit of exposure from them, but the guy wanted to fight. And it's like, he didn't even bring a knife to a gunfight. He brought nothing to the fight. He just wanted to fight. And it's like, well, this is what happens.
Well, you know, everybody's got to take their shot. TNA, when they brought in Hogan and Bischoff, and they thought they were going to do the Mondays against WWE. But it was, you know, there's taking the fight. And in all honesty, AEW is the only one who was legitimate because they were on. And it has nothing to do with the wrestling. It's the fact that they were on TNT, TBS, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And they had recognizable faces. Oh, Jon Moxley. Oh, Chris Jericho. Oh, Matt Hardy. Oh, Jeff Hardy. Oh, Claudio. Christian. Edge.
Yeah.
But it's funny because... Mark Henry, Big Show. But the thing is, Punk's a bigger star again now, back in WWE, than Edge. It's, you know, it's that moving the needle thing, what you're paying people, Mercedes Moné, whatever, millions of dollars. She's not generating.
Yep.
He's in a bidding war against himself.
Well, that's it. And the guys know it. The boys know it.
She probably presented something to WWE and they said, we're good.
That's apparently what actually
happened. And again, to me, wow, WWE probably would have paid her $1 million because they can do that these days. But what Tony Khan's offering is basically two shows a week, no house shows. And you're going to get more money. You know, it's like the Ospreay thing. He made the right choice. Ospreay could have been AJ Styles, or he could be Nakamura, who's just there. He's just a guy, and he gets a little he gets a little push, but he's nothing compared to what he was in Japan. And Ospreay would have been what, the NXT champion?
Quite possibly. And the thing was, with him too, he made a personal choice, and that was
easier schedule.
And he could live in England still. That was a big
because effect. Of the schedule, because you only have to come in. Right. And Tony Khan will pay you to fly in Wednesday, to leave Thursday, and then fly you back on Saturday. Like, don't even stay the week.
Right. And you know that they're half of that contract talk had to be, oh, yeah, Wembley's coming up. We're going to make you the world champion in front of your home, you know, your home crowd.
I know for a fact at Double or Nothing, they would fly people in Wednesday. They'd fly out Thursday or Friday and fly them right back to Vegas the next day to go home literally for one day out of 5 days.
Yep. Yep. The only ones who were contractually obligated to stay here were the guys who were the backstage guys like Daniels and Rocky and
right. And then there was people that, you know, they set up their own nerd bar and all the other places
that they were gonna do appearances. Yeah.
But when I hit up Sanjay, like, hey, what about doing a seminar? And I was like, oh no, I'm flying home. And it's like, and then you're flying back? He's like, yep. Coming in Sunday morning of the pay-per-view. So,
I have
that kind of cash.
And those guys, there was a number of those guys who, when the pay-per-view was done at like 9:45, they didn't get out of there until almost 1 o'clock in the morning because there was still, you know, the press conference and then all the other stuff that they were doing.
The fight with the dog and everything. Oh, that was good.
So it's, you know, again, it's from the inside, I've noticed, you know, in different departments and stuff, there's a lot of chaos. It's just not run right.
I see my guy Ace Steel got to wrestle for TNA.
Yeah, huh? That's pretty, you know, again, then you look at TNA and what they've been doing, you know, it's remarkable what Scott put in place to get them to have what they have now. Now it's interesting to see what the actual company, now that you have a business running it. Again, it's like the same thing. You look at WWE, they're not necessarily running it as a wrestling company. They have the wrestling company people in place, but they're running that whole entity, you know, as a business first and foremost. And they don't give a shit about, you know, this, that, or the other. What's best for the business? And it's now we're seeing this in pro wrestling that it's hard to see it have a drought again. Because it seems like they can always keep it, you know, moving like UFC, you know. You never see UFC have a drought per se.
I'm waiting for the day that Friday night it's UFC and Saturday night it's WWE in the same arena, and then you get the crossovers.
Yep.
That's next. There's no doubt.
It is. We were just talking about this, I think, last week. Why not WrestleMania weekend? How can you not run a UFC show at T-Mobile? Get those UFC fans in here on a Friday night because SmackDown's only, 12,000, 15,000 in an arena, right? So you bring in those UFC fans for that Friday night fight, and then guess what? You just sold tickets to WrestleMania for Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, at $800 a night for a room, sure.
Yeah, but the UFC fans are crazy enough, if it's a good enough fight, that they'd pay for that shit.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable the opportunity that crossover has And it's
how not- about this? How about this? At WrestleMania, John Jones fights Daniel Cormier in a UFC fight at WrestleMania. How many?
You
don't need to do it at WrestleMania, sorry, because WrestleMania is already sold out.
Right.
But go do a Money in the Bank, and instead of doing it where you have to move it from Allegiant, now you do it in Allegiant because you're having UFC fight on a wrestling card.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It may not work the opposite way, but it'll definitely work. Imagine if Brock Lesnar fought a UFC fight against John Jones at a WWE event.
With the actual...
Actual UFC fight.
Right.
I know there's probably a lot of people that are going to believe it was, a work.
That's going to be the biggest thing.
But the Athletic Commission would be involved, and it would be, boom, there's the fucking cage. It'd be crazy.
Especially if you utilized the storytelling buildup, of the WWE's, creative. Now you've just crossed the worlds to where that, again, you want to talk about real forbidden doors? That's always been the biggest forbidden door, right?
I got to call my guy Jeff from Tough Enough. They're the few, again, I've said it before, they stole the name and called after they saw our stuff. It ain't no lie. Jeff didn't deny it.
Yeah.
The future stars of MMA and the future stars of wrestling clash. And we got Dave Mazzani versus Brett the Threader. We do a Natural Born Killers type show.
Sure. Yeah.
With his crowd and our crowd. And now you got Royce Isaacs fighting somebody.
Shit. Yeah.
These guys are legit shooters. Hey, Jeff Cobb.
Lawler. Shit.
Lawler and Isaacs are beefing.
Yeah.
Team Filthy, no more. The winner gets the rights to the name.
What is Royce going to do with Team Filthy? Considering it's Tom's nickname. Come on.
It's kind of like, what are they doing with the name, the 1% that somebody gave them? Bastards.
All right, Joe, as we wrap up this week, final thoughts going into the anniversary.
Yeah, big weekend, man. Come on down. We got Saturday at 7 o'clock. We're going to have a few matches. We got Braxton's going to wrestle Oliver Kanaday. The Mariachis are going to be in attendance to have a match. We also got Davion Jacoe against Fox Valentine. So that's happening starting at 7. We're inducting Paulie, the Commish, Kenny King, Vegas Legend, as well as our super fan, George Furman. I always call him the champ. Every time I see him, hey, it's George Furman. And we got that going on. And then, of course, the anniversary show. I pushed the limit on Front Row. Usually we got about 88. Somehow I magically got to 93, and I'm going to still see if I could squeeze 3 more in. I don't care. Try to get to 100 if I could. I always like to say you never run out of Front Row, but sometimes you do. So, family 4-packs available on the website for $20 a ticket.
Yeah.
GA, second row available, a monster card. Numerous championship matches. It's going to be a good time. People you haven't seen in a while. And I hate to say that there's going to be some surprises because I asked that question on Facebook. It's like, if there's going to be a surprise, do you want to be surprised? Right. Or do you want to know? Because it's still a surprise. What's your opinion on that?
Quite honestly, I think that personally, if it's kept quiet, then it, if it legitimately is kept quiet where no one fucking knows, and it's, you know, it's a big enough thing that will really surprise people, shock people, pop people, then you keep it a surprise. Because I think
what if
part of it,
what if you tell everybody there's a surprise, and then match two, there's a surprise, but match six, there's a bigger surprise. Who's to say we have a surprise? How do you know there's not four of them?
Right. Well, that's true.
That's you know what I'm saying? Yeah. But maybe, just maybe, you sell a few extra tickets because, hey, we got a big surprise happening. Yeah. You know, is that why Tony Khan does it? Because he thinks it's going to generate viewership, might generate ticket sales. Oh, a former champion returns. What a surprise. And then it's somebody who won the Atlantic, the prestigious California, North Dakota championship, the tournament that they had 7 years ago. And they're bringing the Western States Heritage Championship.
Well, so basically what you're saying is you got Jody signed for the
I didn't say we're having a surprise. I was just asking a question that if somebody wanted to know, or would you keep it a secret?
Well, at least we know that Melissa Santos will be ring announcing. So
Melissa Santos will be the ring announcer from Lucha Underground, and also Mrs. Cage.
Mrs. Cage. Yeah.
Maybe there'll be a surprise. And Brian Cage will show up to carry her microphone. Nope, he's going to be in Australia, so can't surprise you with Brian Cage.
But if
he is a former champion,
right? But if a huge guy under a lucha mask shows up, then we know he didn't catch his plane, right?
Is he really in Australia? That's why you got to come and see.
Well, there you go. It's going to be at the Silverton. And, of course, you can catch it on Triller as well.
Yeah, I want to mention a guy, Keith Evans, that we dealt with. I was looking today for some email about something 7 years ago. It was like I talked to him 2 weeks ago about the anniversary show. Everything was set. We're all good. And all of a sudden, I go on Facebook, and it's like, holy fuck, Keith Evans died. And it's like, holy Christ. And then the next day was like Willie Mays died. And I was just scrolling right now and Donald Sutherland just died.
Yeah.
It was like, Jesus. And I try to tell everybody, man, it's like, I may joke a lot about it and stuff, but man, when you get older, man, you know, there may not be my show next week. You could be dead. I could be dead. You just never know. It's crazy. Never used to think that when I was 20 or 30, man.
Right. Where the odds actually were in your favor of dying because of all the stupid shit that
you know, it's like when people say, oh, happy birthday. And my response is usually, yep, 1 year closer to death. You know, people say it's morbid, but it's the truth. Every day I live is one less day I'm going to live.
Right.
And at 58. I'll be 59, not 60. But, you know, next month I'll be 59. Well, I'm definitely more than halfway around the fucking go round because I don't think I'd want to live to be 118.
Yeah.
The fuck am I going to be able to do? I'm going to book a show?
Well, you know, maybe that would be the time that you induct yourself into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, pass the torch.
When Joey takes over at 97.
Yeah, at 88.
Yeah.
All right, finally giving it to you, kid.
All right, everyone. Well, on that note, trying to stay alive.
On that note of morbidity.
Yes.
Is it morbidity?
What? Well, if you're a fat guy, would that be morbidity?
Yeah, I guess so. It could be.
Died from morbidity.
You know, I did have 6 bypasses. I could go fucking 5 minutes from now.
Right.
Knock on. There you go. Here's some wood. Knock on wood. You know, so far so good.
Well, we'll see. Maybe one of the guys will pull an audible during the show that might set off the 7th bypass.
Yeah, it could. You know, you can never count out those guys.
Oh man! All right, everyone. Until next week, tune in again to Triller. Catch the show if you're not in town. But if you're in town, come on down to Silverton.
And the Hall of Fame's on Roku.
Yeah, Hall of Fame will be on Roku. And again, if you're in town on Saturday, catch out the Hall of Fame. And if anything, I get a chance to meet Kenny's whole family. So
his whole family, yes.
Excellent. You guys have a wonderful rest of your week, and we'll see you guys next time.